You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com. We are driven by Continental. And as always, we are in the green room. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw here. That is your Thursday crew, so get used to that. Matt Doyle will be with us on Mondays, and I don't know, sometimes a special occasion will bring him in. But today he is with his cats somewhere. I mean, what's he?
UConn's losing, so I don't know.
What?
UConn's losing, I think. So
oh, really?
That's like
right
what
now?
He's doing.
I was wondering whether there was a meltdown on Twitter.
Yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense. And his glass box in the sky where he and Tiquito
so
and General
So mute Doyle challenges. Now if you really don't care about a random college basketball program.
So we have an ETR bingo board. And Doyle's cats are one of them. I think probably reference to colleges is another.
Probably.
We will get into that probably on Monday because I want Ben Bear to be here because I think there's some Ben Bear slights in there. And when there are Ben Bear slights,
speaking
we want
of
him
colleges,
to
my college ripped my heart out. Right? A college I've been invested for years.
And mine, David.
Stop.
I became
Every
a fan
single time
tonight.
I bring up
Stop.
Mine. You ravage me.
Yeah, no. But mine, like, we never win anything. Bobby decides 3 minutes before the game, I'll be invested too. And then has the audacity to come after me the day after, like, bro, I'm not going to get invested.
I put my
again.
Faith in you, David. I put my faith in you and you let me down.
For those of us who had no idea, can you just give us, like, the Twitter 140 character version of
my
what
school's
happened?
Been to the tournament once since 1990, yeah? And we made it to the final. We were up 15 in the second half, and we ended up losing in OT.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's
I coached another time.
On to a positive topic here. We've got a great show for you today.
Yeah, because life is good.
CONCACAF Champions League, CCL Fever. We are burning up. We may have to go to the emergency room. 3-for-3 in the first leg of the quarterfinals against Liga MX. Red Bulls, 2-0 winners on the road in Tijuana. Toronto FC hosting Tigres. Yes, that Tigres. Dominant Tigres. Filthy Tigres. 2-1 winners with drama. With some just some Tekkers-esque goal scoring from Jonathan Osorio. And then Seattle 1-0 against Chivas to finish off the night at home. Second leg, man. That's where the free space disappointment may come into play. But we'll go over all that. We'll also talk trade rumors, roster holes, transfers with Paul Tenorio, now a national writer here at MLSsoccer.com, which we are all so jacked up about. The mailbag is coming. You know how to get at us. MLSsoccer.com/mailbag, hot take hotline. You probably know the number off the top of your head by now. If you don't, 401-206-0MLS. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com is the email. And Extra Time Live is back as well. So go check out the very first episode of 2018. Julie Stewart Binks was with us. Charlie Davies was with us. I don't even think there's somebody famous named Charlie Stewart.
I don't think so either.
That's just like
But you know what's bad?
That's
what's
like your
worse?
Accountant.
The people that rip on us because we don't know who Charlie Stewart is.
Yeah.
Because it's about to happen.
It probably is about to happen. We're getting some emails on that one. We had a lot of fun, played some MLS heads up. Charlie told us stories about breaking U.S. national team teammates' ribs wrestling. Just bizarre stuff. And, of course, Julie is Julie, so she's wildly entertaining. Let's go, man.
Let's go.
I stayed up late last night. I put the baby to bed.
It wasn't that late.
Midnight is very late for me. So I stayed up far past my normal bedtime. Because I had hope. After the Red Bulls got that 2-0 win, BWP with the double, I thought, you know what? Tigres, Toronto FC, that's basically a final. Feels kind of like a final to me. And then, of course, Seattle and Chivas, there's plenty of storylines to go around there. I want to start with TFC Tigres, though. This game, I mean.
It was awesome.
Soccer Twitter was in fuego.
Yeah. So, obviously, real quick at the beginning, the field sucked. We're all aware of that.
Yeah.
It hurt the game. Okay, moving on from there.
But actually, the field sucked and was also beneficial to Toronto FC, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Okay, but moving on from there, these are the two best teams in the region. You could argue Toronto FC is the best team in MLS history. You could argue this Tigres squad is the best team in Liga MX history. That's what you saw on the field. You saw 11 players on both sides who are high-level soccer IQ. Good technique. You saw speed. You saw two different game plans play out. You saw quality in individuals. I thought, similar to MLS Cup, I mean, you can just start listing them off. But Josie played like a monster. Michael Bradley played maybe his best game I've seen him play for TFC. Javinko was Javinko of old. He was beating guys. He was aggressive. I think the field really hurt him because he couldn't move as quickly.
There's
and
not
couldn't
that
get
separation.
Shots off. Yeah. But they moved the ball quickly. Jonathan Osorio scored the goal, but it's not just that. He once again was aggressive with his first touch. He moved the game. He was able to beat a defender when he had to. And the five-man back line for this team works. I'm not just trying to, like, toot my own horn, but those three defenders are Drew Moore, Chris Mavinga, and whoever the third one is, seem most comfortable in that formation. And Michael Bradley's able to drop in and pick up the ball. God, this game was awesome.
It was.
This game was awesome.
And Bobby, by the way, just to out Bobby, you took a girl on a date to go watch CCL.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that is that makes perfect sense. I tweeted last night because somebody's like, oh, you know, like, you guys all seem normal. I'm like, well, we're up at like 11 o'clock tweeting about CCL. None of us are normal.
This game,
certainly Bobby's not normal.
Yeah, clearly Bobby. I'm gonna take you off the hook here, Bobby. I'll move
Thanks.
Back. This game, watching this game, was the most invested I've felt, like, nervous, excited, enjoying watching a game in a really long time. Just one, I always root for MLS teams. I watched at home on the big projector. My girlfriend got a projector, so they throw it on the wall. We throw it on the wall. I don't know who they are. because FC Dallas defeated my hopes last week.
Yeah.
I came in here so defeated, so I wasn't going to, like, go out and, like, you know, have a whole thing and then watch a team get
FC
washed.
FC Dallas, I felt this last night, and I felt it on Tuesday night, because that's when they would have been playing.
Yeah.
America wiped the floor with Taro.
Yeah.
I felt robbed by FC Dallas of a, like, 4-for-4 MLS Liga MX.
Yeah.
Like, what this format was, I think, really meant to be, and that's no disrespect to, like, the Costa Rican clubs and
it
Panama.
Is. This
well,
format,
is that, no is that
this
disrespect?
Format is disrespect to those clubs.
There
total
is an
disrespect.
Element of that.
Yeah.
There
total
is
disrespect.
An element of that. But, like, I have my rooting interests where they lie, and I have my interests where they lie, and I want to see MLS Liga MX. And so I was still a little bitter with FC Dallas for dropping the ball.
You know the best part about these games, guys, is they were fun, but the real deciding factor of them wasn't anything on the field. It felt like it was all mental. And after everything we've been through since World Cup qualifying, feeling like we're just not enough, feeling like we just can't deal with these situations as American soccer culture, all three of those wins were predicated on some mental edge that
also,
we got.
Also, let's add the fact, and we're going to get into it a little bit more, that the deciding factor in almost all three games was homegrown or academy players for all three MLS squads, which is something that we've talked about a lot. And we've also talked about how just sometimes they're not good enough yet, and we don't know how to prepare them. And
it's a stretch for the Red Bulls since Robles on one end and BWP on the other.
Okay, but six other players on the field are
seven
academy
at the
kids.
End. That was a great point.
Okay. Can I make one note before we get to the nitty-gritty here? We said American. You were talking about American mindset and recovery. Well, Canadian as well.
Course,
and look,
sorry.
Canada has their
I'm
own
still
set
bad
of
guys,
problems and, you know, mental weights.
Although
that
they have
hang
much more
them.
Success in this competition.
They have, yeah. They absolutely
have.
So here's the history when you're talking about you know, kind of the last time something like this happened. We go back to 13-14 CCL. LA Galaxy and Sporting KC, each won at home. These are at home. 1-0 against Tijuana and Cruz Azul. San Jose tied. Toluca 1-1. None of them went through. Tijuana won 4-2 on the return at home. Cruz Azul won 5-1 on the return at home. Toluca won on PKs. So San Jose,
that game
that was
epic. Nuts.
Yeah, that game was epic. Go back and watch those highlights if you want to. Let's get your thoughts on TFC Tigres, Bobby. I mean, from just kind of a player's standpoint, from a guy who was in 2011 who won in Mexico, what did this feel like to you?
It felt the biggest games against these Mexican teams are always the hurdle. We understand that the mental hurdle. We understand that Mexican teams are a little bit better, but we just make them better because we're scared, because of this narrative we've built. So for TFC to have gotten this first win and then go on the road knowing that they can do it, the thing is, guys, they didn't just win. They were the better team for a big part of that game. So that part, for me, not only did they get the result, but just to show that they were the better team for large portions, it's just that belief, I'll say it over and over again, to go down to Mexico and believe they can do
and
it.
And not just believe, they played their game. That could have been.
It's hard to tell what game it was on that field. Not talking tactics right now.
Okay,
I just couldn't tell.
Well, I don't know if that's totally true, because I would argue that TFC played through Michael Bradley. They played in possession the majority of that game. They played a high line at times and pushed numbers into the attack, not being scared to get hit on the counter by Eduardo Vargas, Chilean international, and Ener Valencia, Ecuadorian international, two of the best strikers in the region. Mm-hmm. So they played their game, and to me, watching that, it felt like it could have been a playoff series from last season. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't matter that it was a Liga MX opponent or a big one. TFC, like you said, has the belief that they are good enough to win in this competition, and that was really fun to watch, even after a really not bad goal that they gave up, but
it's weird to see Mazinga get beat like that. That was really surprising. Have we seen him get beat like that?
Come on, it's Vargas.
I know. I understand.
It's Vargas. It's a free header in the midfield. I mean, I know we put a lot of that on Mazinga getting beaten that 1v1.
I thought Bono's off his post.
Like that, yeah. And also, in a game like this, you can't put a goal kick up there that's just completely unchallenged for.
Yeah.
You can't give him a free header to stuff it back down your throat, and that's what happened. And look, that goes down to the 52nd minute. Vargas with a beautiful finish. Let's not like take anything away from him. That dipping shot right underneath the paw of Bono. They're up 1-0, and you're thinking, ah, crap, because APG, Gignac, came off the bench at halftime. Tuca Ferretti basically, I think, was like, oh, okay, this is going to be a really tough game. Yeah. Maybe I underestimated Toronto FC. This is going to be a tough game. I got to get off my bench. I got to put in my big guns. We got to go after it. And in the end, it didn't matter. 13-5 in shots. Toronto FC led this. They did not have the edge in possession, but it was pretty even on this night. And then Josie Altidore, who else in a big game, gets the goal 8 minutes after Vargas gets the opener. Marky Delgado with the one-time feed. And this is where I'll take you back to when I kind of alluded to the field helping them. There was that big divot, like almost like a – I don't know. It's like, was that the hash mark for football? Or I don't know what it was. It was like they drove a tractor up the middle of this field. That divot pushed the ball wider and like made the shooting angle better for Josie. He didn't actually have to take the touch. It just naturally, it was almost
green,
like
Andrew.
English on a cue, almost like English on a cue ball, just drawing it out. And so he could turn and run onto it. It took it away from the defender, increased the shooting angle. What's Josie do? Well, of course, he finishes it.
But let's not just talk about the field. Delgado gets in the right position, and what
that's a great pass.
And I don't want to bash on Seattle for no reason, but when you watch TFC, Jovinko, Josie, and Michael Bradley are three best players on the field. If the correct pass is someone else, they're quick to get it off their foot and move the play. Dempsey and Lodera are not the same one.
No.
And watching those two teams, that moment,
that's a great point.
Jovinko gets into the right area, and he could have had Delgado earlier. He tries to keep it for a second. Then he plays Delgado in a dangerous space. You saw it consistently. Jovinko would get into the right side of the box. He'd play it back to the top to Osorio. Play it out wide to Vanderweel. They move the ball well, and that goes to why they score goals like that.
Yep. So Marky Delgado also put in a yeoman's effort on the other side of the ball in this game, as he always does. But the great assist, Josie Altidore does his thing. And then, I mean, this is one of those moments that we're going to be throwing in highlight reels. We're going to be talking about for years, especially if Toronto FC managed to make it through. Jonathan Osorio, the Brampton zone, the hometown kid.
Oh, so.
What a goal. The back heel, cool as you like.
The near post run.
Like stupid swag. Just like a big swing of the heel and almost a drag and roll back through in the 89th minute. To send BMO Field alight, and my kid's asleep, my girlfriend's asleep, and I'm yelling in my living room, watching this on a Go 90 stream on my computer, like pounding on the side of the couch, having to like quickly quiet myself down. That's the kind of moment it was.
It was awesome, and it felt like they weren't going to score because they had a look right before, basically from the same space
they
across
had a couple.
The face.
Osorio had
well,
that
they
look.
Had looks all half. They had. I thought after they scored that they looked like they could get chances whenever they wanted, and I thought they took their foot off the gas in that moment, which was one of the more upsetting parts of the game for them. In the first half, my only commentary negative was about them was I thought Osorio wasn't aggressive enough around the 18. He didn't take shots when he was in places. Obviously, he then shows up late. But first of all, the pass by Drew Moore to slide it down, he's on the top of the box looking the other way, and he slides it into the path for Jovinko to make the cross, and then you've got three TFC runners. So it's not just Osorio.
Yeah,
they're aggressive. They're getting in the right position. Josie's right behind him. And it was an epic goal and an epic spot for the hometown kid. Like that's.
Did you see when that ball for Tigres went in, did you think there was any chance they come back?
No. I thought they might get it to 1-1, but I thought the moment it went in, I said, we're going to walk away from this and be like, they should have done more.
I felt like it was a backbreaker because they had played so well and because it was just such a like.
Softish.
Yeah, it was just like a what? Come on, guys. These are the details that made you so good last year. The little things that you don't mess up that give them kind of obvious, easy opportunities. And against, you know, I don't want to like drag any MLS teams here, but against some MLS teams that doesn't get punished when you've got Vargas and APG and all these other just internationally acclaimed players on the field, Inter Valencia, you get punished. And he punished them.
To put you, one of the reasons I'm so impressed, to put you in the shoes of the players, one reason narrative matters, guys, because if you're a player on that field and you go down 1-0 to a team like Tigres and everyone expects you to lose, we like to think that players fight and are gritty their whole game, but there's a part in your mind that says, you know what, people expect us to lose, it's not okay, but it's more okay.
Right.
And you don't have that urgency as if it's a huge failure. You'll be upset if you lose the game, but you're not as upset.
Yeah.
Right? So for them that to fight sense. Back and say, we owe this to win. We have to win. We need to go get these points. It was so impressive on an individual human level for these guys to have that confidence and that urgency to still go get it.
Mentality is huge. I thought Chris Mavinga, that tackle after the game-winning goal here, that was huge. I mean, that
he
was ballsy.
He fouls Zavaleta. He doesn't foul the attacker, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but that is like two studs in on your own teammate, which is fair.
Jesus Dueñas probably should have been called for a handball in this game in the box. Probably should have been a PK for TFC. Maybe 3-1, maybe changing the course of this series. We'll talk about that in the Seattle game as well, which, you know what, let's get to it right now. We'll talk about the second leg. Yeah.
Well, are we throwing I mean, Red Bull's had a historic win.
They're going third. They're coming.
They go third? They go down and throw a 2-0 up?
We're going in order of last night coming first.
Okay.
I know you feel like Red Bull's fans just know it's not personal, okay?
They're going to think it's personal.
They might, but I just told them that it wasn't.
100% going to think
it's personal. I reordered Dave's order on the rundown here. So
I don't care about that. I'm just saying
I'm absolving you of any guilt.
Oh, they just dropped a 2 spot.
Yeah, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
Seattle dropped the 1 spot. No Leerdam, no Victor Rodriguez, no Wolf Ikram, obviously no just Jordan Morris, no Ozzie Alonso. Clint Dempsey, as he does, gets the goal in this match. But props to Hanwal Buwana. Props to Wingo, who comes in and gets the assist. These are guys that maybe you look at and say not ready and prove they're ready. Now, it helps that Chivas.
Props to Schmetzer for playing them.
Yeah, that's another one as well. He kind of had his hand forced, but still props. But look, it's maybe still a situation where you say he should have been better.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy here, but in this tournament – with these stakes, with the return leg to Mexico, 1-0 is good. Buwana drew a penalty that absolutely was not called. That was a penalty. They should have had that opportunity. And Clint Dempsey was honest after this one in saying that he missed some chances that he shouldn't have. But they had an opportunity to win a little bit bigger and to set themselves up to go back to Guadalajara. I still think they're fine. I still think they can do it. But part of CCL is, you know, regret, disappointment, regret, free space.
Exactly. This feels like the Seattle we've come to know, guys. Somebody hit me up on Twitter, and he said, do you think the Sounders have the firepower to win this game? And my answer was yes. The only problem with the Sounders is you literally never know what you're ever going to get. Some days they're brilliant, and some days they're bad, and there's no rhyme or reason, is there? It just feels like it's totally random how they play on any given day.
I think part of it is health and who's on the field.
But I mean, they don't even have a style ever.
Yeah, no,
right?
They don't
There's
have
no
a style.
Method to the madness,
no,
it feels
the,
like.
The method is get the ball to Dempsey and Lodeiro and see what they can do, and the one thing I think they commit to is the fullbacks push really far and they stay wide, so they have that option all the time and they like to slide that ball through to them and then the cutback for Bruin or Dempsey or whoever's crashing. But I would agree with you, there's not a huge style. You also watch that game and the field felt so big. It felt like there was so much space to play and Seattle just wasn't using it. And the ball wasn't moving that quickly and there wasn't a ton of movement off the ball. And so it felt like a lot of watching when you just watched Toronto and there was no ability to play on the ground and they still tried to do it. It felt like night and day in terms of that. Mm-hmm. This is a Chivas team that's the worst Mexican team left in this competition. And it's a Chivas team that doesn't have a lot of self-belief in themselves. But it should have been a 2-0 win.
That's the key point, the self-belief. 16th in Liga MX right now. But not just that, just the whole feel around Chivas is bad. So for them to get the win at home, even though it was only 1-0, Andrew, to me just to win it all and to put the pressure on Chivas in Guadalajara, have to chase the game when the weakest part of their team is the defense and their defensive structure, to not only have the pressure from the crowd, from themselves, plus to have to chase the game, even though it's only one goal, really puts the advantage
so,
in Seattle.
Seattle doesn't play this weekend. Toronto FC don't as well.
And you get a chance to get healthy.
Yeah, that's the big thing for them.
They need to get, like, if they could get Leerdam back, that would be huge.
And they get to wait till Wednesday. Red Bulls host TJ on Tuesday at 8 p.m. on UDN. Tigres hosts TFC at 10 p.m. on Tuesday. So they get all the way to Wednesday. Can I just say that Waylon Francis, I love Nuhu Tolo. I think he's got a great future ahead of him. Waylon Francis on that left side in the attacking third is – head and shoulders beyond where Nuhu Tolo is right now, just from a decision-making standpoint and a quality of service standpoint. And I think for this team in this competition and going forward as well, that's huge because if you're relying on Lodeiro and Dempsey to create all your goal-scoring opportunities or like Will Bruin to be dogged or, you know, you hope when Wolf Ikram comes back that he is that guy, you need to have that guy on the wing that says, okay, when I'm in the final third, my head's up, I can pick a pass, I know the pace to put on it, I know who to find, and I think Waylon Francis looks like that guy
and
right now.
And they lose something without Leerdam because McCrary, who's played well for a guy who you don't expect to play this much, he doesn't have the speed to get up into the play. And I think there's a clear recognition of don't risk yourself because we don't have a ton of cover for you, and your main role is defensive. When on the flip side for Waylon Francis, I think there's that freedom. I just want to throw this out there. So Guadalajara is the lowest altitude of all three of the Mexican cities that we'll be hosting.
I love when you bring this in.
There you go. And the Estadio Chivas, Estadio Omnilife, I don't know what it's called right now, is the newest stadium. It's probably, and I don't know if this is the correct term, the most American stadium. You've talked about how things are just different. It is a very it's brand new. It's very American.
So they're
built.
Not going to turn off the air conditioning.
I don't think they can.
I guess the heater.
I don't know if they can. Also, like you said, fans that will turn on their team if it's not going the way they want. So Seattle goes in with a lead. If they can get one or two pieces healthy and they can go in there and they can play defensive and Torres and Marshall can move pieces around in front of them, keep things in front of Fry, this could get really good for them if they can probably get through the first 45.
Just to give Sounders fans some red meat here, every game I watch – Cristian Roldan, especially in this sort of environment, the more I love him as a player. I love Cristian Roldan. I'm just like, it's even on the field, yes. His movement of the ball, the way he competes, the way he wins headers that he shouldn't, the way he turns around and gets the attack started and finds the right feet. But, like, you know, Ladero gets the ball kicked to him, and here comes Cristian Roldan shoving, yelling, being that kind of like
absolutely
hard presence that you need. It's like back to blank up. You know what I mean? Let's go.
So you're saying Christian Alex Roldan double pivot for the second leg?
Roldan.
All right. Well, can I take it there real quick?
Sure. Because you were mad. I could see that you were frustrated that I jumped in. Did I steal a point from you, Bobby?
I'm openly willing to admit that I'm still not sure how I feel about Christian Roldan, which I know is so silly at this point. But everything you said there is accurate. But I just want to say, when you play against a team from Mexico – having been a defensive midfielder in these games, the toughest part is that Mexican players are really, really good, better than American players, better than players from most countries, at finding the spots to your side, right? They're good at finding those openings. So when you play against Mexican teams on a rare basis, as a defensive midfielder, you're like, I can't – how did he pop up there? Gustav Svensson is not a mobile guy. If I'm Schmetzer – and Svensson's a good player, I would put a more mobile player who can deal with those situations than Svensson.
Who's that Jordi Delem?
Yes, probably.
I
mean, maybe
no, I don't know, man.
It's not going to be Ozzy.
Because you got to have the experience in Mexico, too. I understand that you want that athleticism there, but I just think with those sorts of stakes, with the pressure that's going to be on Seattle, the leadership, the experience,
the one
quality
other,
on the ball,
the one other thing
vision.
What you could do, which they have done in the past, is quote-unquote Roldan plays the six and Lodero gets pulled deeper to play alongside him.
That's where I
would
have
gone.
Which
would give you athleticism, but then Lodero has to be defensive.
You're up 1-0. You didn't give away goals. You got to be locked down. Like, you can't.
My point is this would make you more locked down. If you look at the goal that LAFC scored for Vela, it was Svensson not getting in front of the lane, in front of Vela. And here we go, the Mexican player being able to find that spot and capitalize on it. And these players are so good on the half turn, getting the ball, facing your center backs. Having played against Mexican teams like that, that's a huge difference from the everyday life in MLS. So I would not be surprised. I mean, I would be surprised to see Smetzer make the change, but he probably should.
So second leg for the Sounders at Estadio Chivas on Wednesday, March 14th, 10 p.m. Eastern, UDN. All these games are now on UDN. Also Go 90 as well. If you'd like to get it in English, you're just looking to stream it. Those are free from Go 90. The final game here, the one that got it all started, the one that, you know, got that hope roiling in your wherever it is in your body that you felt it, was the Red Bulls with a 2-0 win in Tijuana. BWP in the 9th and 67th, Luis Robles doing Luis Robles things. I mean, he was fantastic, magnificent, everything that you would want your captain to be. Tim Parker plays 90. Yes, thank you. Yes, they didn't play well for the whole game. They were outplayed at times, but you're on the road. Just find a way. Just get it done and be opportunistic.
Regarding the not playing well, Doyle does a ton of good writing work, but I thought his article this week was so spot on about game states. They scored the goal early. They were on the road. It's so rare that a team plays well at that point. It's just the nature of soccer. The game state changes, and you just get put defensive. So it's tough for me, Andrew, to put in perspective how well they played or didn't play based on that single thing. They did what they had to do, given the fact that they scored early on the road.
I would say it doesn't matter how well they played.
Yeah, that's exactly also what I'm
Who
trying
cares?
To say.
This is what we've been saying for years. Like, don't worry about it. Just results, results, results.
Yes.
You know, be the team that everybody looks at and says, this is BS. How did you beat us? And you look at the score sheet, and it's 2-0, and you have two away goals, and you get to come home with a great opportunity to move on.
Yeah, super young team. I think they just learned from that TFC series last year. Like, it doesn't matter what it looks like, and also we can win scrappy, which is not something that they really promoted, I think, the 2 years before that under Jesse. And this is a really young team. So everything they go through together and for the first time. And I could see in this game an exact representation of what they did in that game in the second leg in Toronto when you are on the road, you have no chance, no one thinks you can do it, and you're a high-pressing team that only can do one thing. And then you go out there and you stay structured a little bit and you scrap in midfield. And I don't think they gave up possession in great areas. So I don't think they gave up high percentage chances to Tijuana and BW. Okay, on this show, Doyle has said BWP is not a big game scorer, right?
Yep.
My favorite piece of content from this week was Ben on Twitter trashing Doyle for that take while quietly hiding behind because he has said Robles is overrated. And no one called him out for that because I am here now to do it for you.
Oh, nice.
Both of them stepped up.
You have a long memory. You have a very long memory.
Both of them
stepped
up. I
love Goss,
man. Can I give a
shout-out
I
love this competition.
Can I give a shout-out to Florian Vallot?
Oh, come on, dude.
He was so good.
I mean, Red Bull 2, Pipeline, baby. Like, that pass to BWP, like, the quickness of thought and execution on that is what has to be in that situation. And then it's on BWP to find the space and the angle, and that's what he does. But for a guy like that to come in and make a difference in a game like this, to me, you look at your structure as the Red Bulls, you look at what you've built and done and the philosophy that you've had and where you've invested, and you say, that play alone for Florian Vallot and the time we put into him makes it all worth it.
Mm-hmm.
This has all been worth it. He stepped up on a big stage. He made a game-changing play. We have an opportunity to go to a semifinal now because of it, because that second away goal is so freaking massive.
Yeah.
Huge play.
I was just, can we talk about Jesse Marsh for a second, too, if we're going to talk about Vallot and just the confidence
By the way, I promise we're going to get to Major League Soccer here in a second, week two. I know. And Paul Tenori coming up after the break, but go ahead.
But Jesse Marsh, man, what a performance he gave. And we often look at a game and say, wow, they look confident, they look prepared, and think that maybe that just bubbles out of somewhere. But that is totally, that kind of confidence comes from the way a coach talks to you throughout the week and comes from what he says to you in the locker room before the game. His tone, and we all have bosses. And when our bosses talk to us, we dissect every single word and how they said it to us. And it's the same with the soccer team. The way your coach talks to you before you walk out for a Vallot, what he says to him in those 10 seconds totally dictates how a player can feel. And Jesse Marsh just pushed all the right buttons with his young team and the way he spoke to them and what he said this week.
Tim Parker, what'd you make of that before we go to
break? That he played him?
Yeah.
I made what I made from last week, which is really Colin just can't start for you right now on a go-to basis. And we talked about how complex the Red Bull system is and how much you need to learn. But Tim Parker is a very good center back. He's physically gifted, and he's fit. So you're just going to play the guy. I also make that Aaron Long is really good.
Yeah.
Like, to be your partner in that moment, he has been everyone's partner, for starters.
Yeah.
He came in, and it was like, maybe Aaron Long can hold a spot down. And then Aaron Long immediately, day one, became the consistent guy alongside a revolving door of half-capable center backs.
Red Bulls, too. Just to throw that out again.
Yeah, he was a defensive player of the year 2 years ago in USL. And then stepped up.
Well, was cut from the Sounders, right?
And
released.
Yeah,
Sounders or Portland? Doesn't really matter.
Was once released and is now the mainstay for.
Correct.
He was also a fullback, apparently, back then, which clearly that's not the case. But yeah, this, you're impressed by everything Red Bull have done to get to this moment. And like, what was cool to me across all the games was the embodiment of all of that. And, you know, Osorio scoring the goal from Delgado. And it's just like, TFC have used every single piece that this league has to build that team. Like, whether it's, you know, re-entry draft, whether it's DPs, whether it's academy. And then Red Bulls have chosen this system and this style, and they have done it as well as we've ever seen an MLS team do it. Because we talk about Dallas all the time. But that six or seven guys making a difference, being ready
Should
to come
we
on.
Be talking about Dallas?
No, we're not going to talk about Dallas. They're free space for us right now, okay? Before we get out of here, I just want to throw out there that there's a reason why we're all so jacked up right now, and this is kind of like – I could talk about this for hours. Is this a moment that is a precipice? Is there a turning point here? I mean, it's leg one,
yeah.
So the easy, obvious answer is no, because you got to get it done in leg two, and we talked about 13 and 14. Cruz Azul laying the smackdown. Tijuana laying the smackdown. Toluca getting the job done at home and moving on, which is ultimately what's most important. Seattle, Toronto FC off this weekend. Red Bulls host the Timbers on Saturday night with Giovanni Savarese coming back to Red Bull Arena, to New Jersey, to New York. Probably going to be a Red Bulls 2 game.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
You don't play any.
No, there's
that
no
game.
Reason to. Who gets through? Right now we feel great. Right now we're buoyant. But the free space is disappointment. Yeah. Inevitably, one of these teams, I feel like, we're going to have our heartbreak over. And there's just no guarantees here.
Yeah.
So do we feel like this kind of, feeling of walking on air a little bit after these two nights is fleeting? Or is this the year that something crazy happens and MLS goes 3 out of 4 in the semis?
I don't know that an MLS team wins it this year, but either way, yesterday was a changing point. Because of the MLS team's ability to go out and play their own game and go toe-to-toe with Liga MX teams. To not have to sit behind the ball and defend for 90 minutes and hope they get something on the counter. And yeah, people are going to say, well, what about the Red Bulls? But the Red Bulls went out and did what they had to do on a road game. Chivas went and did the same thing in Seattle.
And by the way, they went cross-country to do that as well.
And they haven't played a regular season game yet. So that was what their
That's
third,
the encouraging thing for me is like, we're like, oh, the timing is bad. But now, it's not that the timing is good, but teams are starting to build into it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of a train wreck.
Yeah, for sure. We're not completely, like.
Yeah, they're not completely out of it, but to, like, every coach's point.
They also have momentum now.
What?
They also have momentum.
Yeah, but are you, like, you're not going to risk a guy. You're not going to risk Wolf Ikrum, who's maybe so-so right now because you have a full season to go. And that's one of the issues, right? If it was midseason and later in the season, then you're at the point where you're like, well, we need to play him. We take that risk. So I think that will always hurt you.
You're going to tell me you don't play him next week?
I don't know. I don't know what.
You do everything you can.
I don't know what Schmetzer
Victor
does.
Vasquez, same you're thing. They're going to rest him. They're going to do everything they can to get on the field. He came in as a sub. He said his back tightened up a little bit. So.
Which was brutal.
And that's where with T-Race fans are like, oh, yeah, well, we didn't play Carioca and this thing. Like, well, you know, Victor Vasquez is the best 11 player, bro. Like,
yeah.
Both teams didn't play their best side.
Andrew, I want to talk about you use the word turning point. What makes me really mad in life is when people are like, oh, turning point, and they expect it to go up. Like, you know how life works? There's turning point, there's turning, like, there's a million turning points, and you have to seize and keep fighting after every single one. So was this a turning point? Yes. Does it mean we accomplished anything? Not a single thing, because there's going to be 100 more turning points, and you've got to keep grinding. So was it a turning point? Maybe, but it doesn't mean it's going to get any easier, and that's what we as a country have to
acknowledge. So here's my three. Seattle, I think, right now is in the worst form and has the worst health. Chivas is the worst team and probably the easiest place to play of the three, so I have no idea. Red Bulls are up 2-0. I trust that Red Bulls can get through that. TFC is the best team in
also
MLS.
Also because Tijuana has issues scoring.
Yeah. And you have a 2-0 lead. You've got two away goals. You should be able to protect that. TFC is the best team in MLS. Tigres is a monster. Gignac only played a half, and you could see how different the team is when he's on the field.
There's a reason why
it's a crapshoot, but it's going to be a great game.
Sotario is called El Volcan.
Yeah,
it's the volcano. So,
well, yeah.
Beware.
It's going to be a special night next week.
It is
Tuesday night. Two of the games. It's going
to
be cool.
We might have to bring Ben Bear on to I don't know, celebrate, commiserate, whatever it is. After all that, remember Tuesday, two games for you. CCL Fever. Red Bulls hosting Tijuana, 8 p.m. at Red Bull Arena, UDN. Tigres hosts TFC after that at 10, also on UDN. Then Wednesday night, hopefully we're talking about two teams already through, but you never know. Chivas hosting the Sounders at Estadio Chivas, 10 p.m. Eastern on UDN. Let us know what you think, 401-206-0MLS, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag, or email us.
Last piece, it matters what happens and how it happens in the second leg, because the who will host the second leg in the semifinals is decided by the results so far.
Right.
So there's like this weird table that's being created.
Points in the round of 16 on, then
stop.
Goal
can we stop this conversation?
Scored.
What do we do? Why don't we have, let's not have this conversation.
Fine.
Yet.
That's fine. Fine. Fair.
Okay. I understand
fair
why
point
you try.
I agree with Bobby.
Good point. No jinxes. No jinxes.
Move on.
All right. We're going to go to break. On the other side, Paul Tenorio. Is Christian Namath on the market? We will find out.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
That's my mojo. 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 That's my mojo.
On Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental Major League Soccer, returning for week two. A packed schedule, as always. It gets started on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Crew SC hosting the Montreal Impact. Get to see if Columbus can carry over that big result against Toronto FC into the second week of the season. Paul Tenorio is on the line now, national writer for MLSsoccer.com. It sounds so good when I say that. At Paul Tenorio on Twitter. Paul, what's up, man?
I'm happy to be on here and happy to be on here for the first time since I started the new role with MLSsoccer.com.
Yeah, man, we've got a 1-2 punch here. We have Sam Stajkal coming to us on Mondays, a little Paul Tenorio on Thursdays. For people that don't know what you're doing with us, give them the roundup here. What should we expect?
You know, I hope to do what I've done, you know, on my previous spots. And you know, part of that is obviously breaking news and trying to be on top of all the news that's happening around the league, you know, whether it's during the transfer windows or outside of that. But, you know, I really want to be able to tell stories about the trends that are going on in the league, the kind of nitty gritty rule stuff, TAM, GAM, all that stuff, and dig into it and kind of be able to shine a light on why teams are doing something, not just what happened, but why did it happen and how did it happen? And so, you know, Sam and I are able to, I think, reach more people within the league through our sources and our Rolodex to tell more of those stories. So I'm really excited about working with Sam, too.
We've already seen a shared byline here, and it's the big one right now. The Revs, who've been in the news so much this offseason between Lee Wynn and Brad Friedel coming in and some roster turnover, sources say, according to you guys, your sources, that they're shopping Christian Namath right now, who they brought in last year and traded, what, 400K allocation, an international roster spot, paid him big money. What's going down with the Revs?
Yeah, it's a really interesting decision, I guess, or tactic. I think most people kind of raised their eyebrows that it was Namath that's on the market because Lee Wynn has been vocal in wanting a trade, and New England took the stance that they weren't going to trade him. And I think also when you look at, like you mentioned, just 6 months ago or not too long ago, they invested $400,000 that they traded to the Crew to move up to that top spot in the allocation order to sign him and sign him at a fairly significant number. Now, anywhere in soccer around the world, new coaches come in and they take control of rosters and they start to maneuver things. I don't think that's any different than we would expect, you know, in Italy or Spain or anywhere else that, you know, coaches come in and they look to assemble their teams. But it's going to be tough, I think, for New England to get a deal done unless they're willing to eat a decent amount of money off of Namath's cap hit. He's about $1 million salary this year. So he's a TAM guy, and I don't know how many teams out there are going to be willing to take on a salary that big. And it's not really a normal thing to see a team eating several hundred thousand dollars of cap space. Usually it's around the $200,000 level. So we'll see if New England can finagle a deal with teams that are out there that, you know, might be a good fit. You look at teams that need Namath or need a Namath type player. And, you know, the one that stands out the biggest is Sporting Kansas City because of the history there. And the fact that Peter Vermees knows him that well, but I don't know that financially the numbers will work out unless New England takes on a good chunk of that cap hit.
Is there any update on the Lee Wynn situation? I mean, not in the 18, this is one of the best attacking players in the league. He's at an age in which, frankly, he needs to be on the field. Is this going to be a season-long thing, the push and the pull? Will he get back on the field? Will they trade him? What are you hearing?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see exactly what happens. I think there are some people who are wondering whether this move that was just announced by New England, Luis Alberto Casado, you know, adds another central midfielder to the mix in New England. Does this maybe give New England now the room to go and move some of these pieces? And if they can find willing partners, mean, with Lee Wynn, I mean, they might be able to get $700,000, $800,000 in allocation money from another team out there. You know, if they can move Namath's money off of their cap, that's a double bonus, right? You're opening up cap space with Namath, you're opening up cap space with Lee Wynn, and you're bringing in a ton of allocation money. So as they start moving around, maneuvering this roster a little bit more, it would make sense that they're now a little more open to trading Lee Wynn. But we haven't heard that yet. I don't know that the trade winds have shifted quite yet. I just think when you look at kind of the pieces that are moving right now in New England, you know, at some point they're going to have to make a decision to either, you know, get Lee Wynn back involved with the team and put him out on the field, or to see what assets they can get for him.
Paul, give me an idea. When you say $700,000 to $800,000 in allocation, that strikes me as a little bit low. Is that your feeling of the market value for Lee Wynn? Because I look at the deals for, you know, David Akam and Sasha Kleschen and others with similar production age profiles, and I wonder why Lee Wynn wouldn't garner more.
Well, I think actually, I mean, if you look at Akam versus Lee Wynn, you know, Justin Merrim versus a Lee Wynn, I think those key years that you're missing there, you know, of someone's career factors in a big amount. I mean, Lee's older than both of those players. Granted, his production is way up there, but the return wasn't overwhelming, I didn't feel, for Sasha Kleschen. There were two players involved in it, which I think adds to that. But Benny Feilhaber was just $400,000. I think Lee Wynn is going to command more than Benny Feilhaber. I think his production and what he does, you know, on the field, what he did last year, double digits in both goals and assists, will certainly help in that. But when you look at the fact that this trade saga has lasted as long as it has, I don't know how realistic it would be to ask for, you know, seven figures of allocation money. I think that $800,000 range is probably realistic, but, you know, at the same time, you know, Mike Burns is a very tough negotiator, and I know, you know, he's come under a lot of criticism for being hard to deal with, but I would say, you know, if you're the owner, as his boss, you're probably pretty happy that he was voted in the Goal.com poll as the hardest negotiator, right? I mean, that means he's doing the job that you
Not
want
if you
him
don't
to do.
Get good deals, Paul.
No, I agree with that
part.
Not
if it doesn't work out for you.
I think that when it comes to selling a player, right, if they're going to make the decision to trade him and they know that there is a team or two out there that really needs him, you know, maybe they can squeak out another couple hundred thousand in allocation for a team that, you know, like a Chicago, for example, who clearly need to add a few more pieces and might say, look, we're willing to overspend a little bit to get Lee Wynn. Maybe that gets it to the $1 million mark. But my, you know, in discussions with people around the league, I would be surprised if it went above 800,000. I think that's kind of the area that people are talking about Lee Wynn.
A team that needs a number 10 or maybe doesn't is your local squad, Chicago Fire. Is John Beccaro the starting number 10? Are they the place where Lee Wynn should land? What do you see there?
Well, they're definitely the place that Lee Wynn should land, I think, for sure. You know, John Beccaro has, you know, in preseason watching him, it's clear that he needs a little bit more time to adjust to the pace of the game at this level, to not in running, but in thought, the thought process behind it. He's taking two or three touches where it needs to be one. And, you know, there is that process that happens with a lot of rookies. And, you know, he's going to play a big role early on for sure. I think he could end up starting in the first game of the season. But as it stands right now, Alexander Kitai is the guy who's going to be a little bit more of the playmaker for them. And he's more than capable of doing that. Very, very good on the ball, constantly looking to get on the ball. When we watched him against Tulsa last week, when everyone else was playing regular season games, the Fire were playing a preseason game, he was all over the field trying to get on the ball. That is going to be the MO of this team. They want to play soccer. They want the ball at their feet with Bastian Schweinsteiger, with Dax McCarty, with Kitai. And I think whether or not Beccaro starts will hinge on how healthy Luis Soliniak is. But from looking at this Fire team, I think they absolutely need a number 10 to come in and be able to break teams down, because they're not going to have the pace to get in behind teams anymore. David Akam's not there. And so you're going to see a lot of teams playing a high line to try to get Nemanja Nikolic away from the box. And they're going to need a 10 to break that kind of defending up.
Paul, I would love to see Chani play that third central midfield role, a good old-fashioned 4-3-3. But either way, as you said, they're missing Akam. Do they have a chance to live up to the expectations that we had after 2017, or is there a definite drop-off for this club this year?
Well, I think you'll be happy with the opening. I mean, I think that they're going to come out in a 4-3-3. Maybe it'll look more like the old Christmas tree formation, 4-3-2-1, a little bit with Katai and Solonyak underneath underneath Nikolic, and they'll push the fullbacks up to give the width. But yeah, I mean, we have to acknowledge that David Akam is a difference maker, and he isn't just a difference maker in goals and assists. He changes the way teams play against you. When he's on the field, you cannot play a high line because he can get in behind in transition so easily, and there aren't many players who can run with him. When you look at this Fire team now, what they lack is pace, and so I think you'll see teams trying to push that back line up and limit the amount of space for Dax McCarty, for Bastian Schweinsteiger, for Chani in midfield, or whether it's or Katai or whoever else is on the ball there, because they can afford to do so. No one's really worried about Nemanja Nikolic outrunning anyone, so they're going to have to be very clean on the ball. And I think we're going to have to see, once again, Brandon Vincent and Matt Polster have a really strong season getting forward and providing service into the box for Nikolic.
I'd argue the biggest result from the first weekend was Houston pasting Atlanta 4-0. We've heard a lot of talk about what went wrong. Do you feel any panic coming out of Atlanta early on? Do you see a reinforcement coming, whether it's at the number six position, center back, wherever it may be?
No panic at all out of Atlanta. I think they understand, you know, look, it was one result. It was a bad result. They've known their needs going into this season. You know, once they sold Carlos Carmona, they understood that they needed to bring in another number six who sit in front of that back line to allow Darlington Nagby to kind of move around and get on the ball as much as possible, a little bit higher up the field, and not have as much of a defensive responsibility. If they can find the right guy who's athletic enough, and who's willing to be disciplined and sit in front of the back line. I think they also want to get a little bit more athletic at center back. They have the money to do it. I mean, you're talking $750,000 in general allocation money from that Carmona sale, another $500,000 in allocation money from trading the rights to Yamil Assad. So right there, you've got $1.25 million in allocation money that you can use to go sign more than one player. I would expect them to be looking at both positions and to add multiple players. They have until May 1st to do it. I would estimate that they're going to try to make a move. A lot of teams that I talk to are looking at that international window in a few weeks and saying, this buys us a little bit more time where we don't have to rush things, and maybe we can use that window to integrate a new player in. You know, I think Atlanta would like to follow that. I would imagine Chicago, which has a couple moves. I think you'll start to see teams trying to get deals done ahead of that break in order to have a good window to integrate a player into training.
You mentioned Yamil Assad, and of course that was a deal that brought a lot of allocation money to Atlanta, but it was also a player that both the organization and the fan base really liked. Why did he end up in D.C.? What happened that forced this move for Atlanta?
Atlanta wanted to bring him back. They just wanted to bring him back at the right price, and the negotiation wasn't easy with Assad. You know, they felt like they gave him a pretty fair offer after the season. He turned it down. He was looking for more money, a better compensation. They started to discuss his rights with other MLS teams. And, you know, I thought, you know, Assad was definitely going to be gone. And then after the Carmona sale, when they had this allocation money, they circled back around to Assad, and they made him a more than fair offer. I'll put it that way. More than double what his salary was in 2017 on average. It was multiple years guaranteed on the contract. That's maybe the most surprising part of this whole thing. He goes to DC United, where he has just essentially a one-year deal with options and a buy that still has to happen at the end of it. But I think, you know, the asking price went up again, and Atlanta just decided to move on, get what they could for a player they didn't own. They got a really nice return on that investment, $500,000. You know, they've got Barco, they've got Julian Gressel, they've got Andrew Carlton. And they felt like, look, we're going to take this money and we're going to invest it somewhere else. And DC United stepped up and was able to get a deal done with all three parties involved, Atlanta, Velez, and Assad.
I got to fight back on the made him a fair offer thing. The dude put up 20 goals. If I put up 20 goals, you know, 13 goals, 7 assists, or maybe switch, I'd be like, how much is that guy making? There's no such thing as a fair offer at that point. You want to be paid within your team. So I'm with Assad on this one.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what his take was, right? I mean, he was looking at Tito Villalba, he was looking at Almiron, he was looking at Martinez and saying, you guys have plenty of money, you know, pay me. I just think, and again, I think the offer that they put forward is, he's getting paid $400,000 in D.C. The offer Atlanta gave him was not worse than that. And it gave him multiple years of guaranteed money. But I agree. I think that the mentality probably from the Assad side was comparing to the players around him. Now, you know, in my estimation and in probably the global market's estimation, he is not Miguel Almiron. He is not Joseph Martinez. And so, the reality is he goes back to Argentina. He's not playing with Velez. And eventually DC United comes in, is able to get a deal done. And I think Dave Casper did a really nice job to be able to use the assets he had to increase his amount of allocation money so that really they only spent $100,000 of general allocation money that they had before those trades in order to get Assad in. And, you know, the buy at the end of this year is only $700,000. It's not bad. So if they get what they hope to get out of Assad, I think it makes it an easy decision for DC United to keep him around.
At Paul Tenorio on Twitter, national writer for MLSsoccer.com. He and Sam Stachel are the team in Chicago. I saw you guys hanging out doing a podcast. I hope we hear more from you on that front as well. Not that we want competition here. We want to keep you coming. But, yeah, I need more Paul and I need more Sam in my life. Small business owners forever. Before I let you go, look ahead to the summer. The spot that you think is going to be the one that is kind of roiling the most, that has the most news, that we maybe see big names. I mean, obviously Zlatan jumps to mind. But what are you looking forward to as this year progresses?
No, I think you nailed it. I think it's L.A. because I think the moves that are still going to happen are going to come with LAFC and with the Galaxy. I think Ziggy Schmidt is still maneuvering with his roster, trying to create cap space, trying to get some assets where he can. LAFC clearly is not done in their roster building, trying to bring in another DP, trying to get this Horta deal over the finish line. By the way, this just shows how difficult it is to sign DPs. There's so many moving parts. A lot of times it takes months to get a deal done. I think the LA market is going to be where we're watching in the summer window, because I think both teams will end up being active. And I would say also Chicago. I mean, I think they're going to try to get a couple things done before the end of the primary transfer window. But if they're, for example, not able to land Lee Wynn, you know, maybe that number 10 purchase, they look at the summer and say, we need to, you know, pull a Seattle and go find a Nico Lodero type of signing who can come in the summer and play right away. Not Nelson Rodriguez's favorite thing to do, to bring players in midseason. But, you know, their hand may get forced here if they can't get something done in the next month or so.
If there's news, Paul Tenorio will be on it. At Paul Tenorio on Twitter, you can find his work at MLSsoccer.com, where he's a national writer. Makes me so happy to say that. Paul, thank you for joining us, man. We'll talk to you every Thursday.
Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it. Always enjoy chatting with you.
Man, we are hashtag blessed to be talking to Paul Tenorio and Sam Stachel every week. On the edge of all the news in Major League Soccer, they really are designated players for us. I'm saying DPs, not TAM. It was hard to get the deals done, but we got them over the line. So check their work at MLSsoccer.com. We talked to LAFC there. They play on Univision on Saturday against RSL at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. All the other games in the U.S., at least, there is a TSN game that's Houston and Vancouver, are on MLS Live, which I have to continue to remind you is scot-free. Costs you nothing. Just got to sign up. You can watch all these games on your smartphone, on your computer, Roku, I don't know, Apple TV, whatever it is that you use. Whenever ESPN Plus comes online, we will let you know. There are also, because we've gotten a ton of questions about this, condensed games available on the app. So a lot of people miss those. I know I miss those. It's basically my job to watch it all now, which, thank God, but you can get the condensed games on the app, and we're constantly trying to improve the quality of those. So stay tuned every single week for that. Let's talk RSL LFC, guys.
Wait, how's your wife feel about the way?
She's not my wife yet.
How's your girlfriend feel about the way you think about Paul?
I don't know. I love her more than anyone else.
I think she's doing okay, because Weeby, in the middle of that interview, was looking at his own Instagram post about her. So.
Well, I was getting a lot of notifications, though. So International Women's Day, that's a good segment. Segue, I'm sorry. Did you transitioned well.
There you go.
Shout out to all the women out there. MLS fans, non-MLS fans, your mothers, your aunts, your sisters, your whatevers. You really make the world go around. So shout out to Mindy. She has made me happier than I've ever been. So now we got the sappy stuff out of the way. God. Yeah,
can we talk about MLS? Like, your turn.
By the way, though, my kid has like pink eye or something.
Can we talk about MLS?
Sure. RSL is my MLS Live team. They're hosting LAFC. LAFC, of course, had that historic win against the Sounders. Carlos Vela. I can't wait to watch him every single week. But I think they have a a different test, not a stiffer test necessarily, but a different test at RSL this week.
I would agree with you. RSL didn't maybe hit all the notes we'd like them to hit in week one, but they're a
team. Good way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, but they're a team that brings back most of their pieces from last year, so we know what they're capable of. And in LAFC's win, you could see deficiencies. You could see where they're going to struggle. Obviously, not a lot of possession throughout most of that game.
Bobby would yell out game state once again.
I don't know if it was that or just their inability to have that. Although I thought Marc-Anthony Kay battled really well in midfield for them. And then question marks along the back line. But this is an RSL team that needs goals. We've talked about that the whole time. You think Luis Silva can do this role, but that means that Severino and Plata and Rusnak need to score goals. Severino had a big look. He missed week one. That could have been 2-0 lead. That could have been game over. 3 points on the road. So this is a team that needs to figure out those moments.
LAFC, Bobby, as they continue to build, what are you looking for from them? I know that you have been kind of fascinated by Bob Bradley's moves, but also the way he's going to actually play as he returns to Major League Soccer.
Bob Bradley's coaching style and the approach he wants to put on the field demands a ton of the players. If you listen to everything he said this preseason, over the last 3 or 4 years, really since he left the national team, the Extra Time radio interview, which you guys did, which was amazing, he used this word courage and bravery all the time. Meaning, on the field, he asks his center backs to put the center mids in tough spots with guys on their back and play out of it. He asks the outside backs, the strikers. He basically asks all his players to say, come get the ball. I know there's players around you. I know you're in a tough spot. But just be brave and go for it. And if you mess up, that's on me. But the question is, are the players good enough? Marc-Anthony Kay had a good game, but is he good enough to deal with those really tough spots in MLS games?
One other thing is, you could say their 11 is fine going out in Seattle, but this is a thin team. So how week to week now does Bob Bradley start to manage this? Also with a season that starts with a road stretch before their stadium opens.
Stadium opening, by the way, on April 29th, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental.
Another segue.
We'll be there, correct. Dave and I are going to go check it out. We're going to take in the first game. You can do it with us. Of course, only a certain amount of people can jam their way into that stadium, so experience it with Extra Time Live. Go like the Facebook page. Go check out that show with Julie Stewart Binks and Charlie Davies, not Stewart. Right? Okay. So, the weekend, as I said, started at 1 p.m., Columbus Crew FC against Montreal. Montreal went and picked up a center back because they had to because everybody's fallen like flies in the center defense. Rod Fanny terminated his contract with Marseille so he could join. He's 36 years old, though, so, you know, it feels like, because it is, they're plugging a hole here.
Yeah, it feels like Remy
Garn. Pronounce it again? Pronounce it again?
Huh?
Fanny?
Rod, I mean, have you listened to this show before? You're sitting here, you're going to look me in the eye, and you're going to say, I mean, I think I am, but I don't know I am.
Yeah. It sounds like Remy
that's also a bingo board square. So if you had the bingo, we'll send the bingo board out after Monday's show.
But it sounds like Remy Gard had a favor out there that he could ask of someone back in France just to like plug this hole.
You're
going to
get PT.
Bit. Yeah.
You're going to get PT.
And he said actually specifically that he talked to Drogba and Henri, and they both said that it would
to try and play center back? That's a risk.
Actually.
No chuckle, Andrew? That was
funny. I don't know. I'm just like trying to read into what you're saying over here.
Actually, physically, those two would be
awesome.
A pretty imposing center back pairing. I picked Montreal preseason because I like a lot of pieces on their team.
You picked them to what?
Make the playoffs.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. You were on the show.
We were literally sitting and everybody else was sitting.
Yeah.
Okay, David Akam for MVP. Relax.
Oh, man.
But that center back's a weakness you can't have. Like, if that's your issue, it doesn't matter what the other pieces look like unless you're putting up six, which they definitely didn't do in the opener.
Not gonna do.
So, yeah, that's a pretty tough one.
1:30, Revs in Colorado, also on MLS Live. Some news out of this one. As Paul told us, the Revs signed Luis Alberto Caicedo Mosquera, what a name that is, on loan with the option to buy. He's a 21-year-old center midfielder from the Colombian second division. So that's kind of a wait and see. None of us are going to sit here and tell you that we know anything about this kid. So he comes in. We'll see what happens with him. Some news on the Colorado side. Heartbreaking news for me, who's been just choo-chooing, and I'm sure you as well, Dave. Courtney Ford, 8 to 10 weeks, MCL sprain as well. Some news with Courtney Ford. He is raising money for his mother. Who is suffering from cancer and having a tough time of it at night. So if you have something to spare, if you can help out the Fords, go do so. There's a GoFundMe out there that you can find. No Dielna, no Dela
You can
Dela
find
Mayan.
It, by the way, if you're at Court Ford on Twitter.
Good call.
K-O-R-T Ford. Mm-hmm. Then you can find that fund.
Revs, no Dielna, no Dela Mayo. We knew that because they both got red cards. They're just going to have to plug two guys in here. Andrew Farrell's a candidate. They've got a couple rookie right backs, so like maybe a Brandon Bye could go in there. Jahlil Anibaba, you'd think, is a definite to be plugged into that
Bobby,
hole.
Bobby, what if you're Brad Friedel, what's your conversation this week? What are you saying to this squad going out there?
Can I just back up one sec?
What are you saying to Diela and De La Mea?
Do we think we have a trivia out there? Can somebody let us know the last time, if it's ever happened, when an MLS team had both center backs sent off in the same game?
It must have happened.
We think it must have. That's what I'm asking. Can somebody let us know if they know the answer?
Yeah.
I want to throw a guess out there, but I don't have one.
That was just – there's
got to be a Hamison-Olave pairing that it happened to.
Probably had to be the Red Bulls,
or maybe Wilming Because
it wouldn't have been Nat Borchers.
Yeah, yeah. It's no, just, I agree.
It's so – I don't want to be the guy that piles on these two, but I have consistently been that person
because
they've
consistently
given reason to do so.
So if you're Friedel, what do you do? You have no center backs. It's a fresh start, and you go out and you blow it in the first week. Like, what are you saying to this team at this point?
If what I think Brad Friedel should do, what I would do, is just relax about it, be optimistic, and say, I have a chance to give young players a go. Tell the guys, Jahlil Anibaba, who's reserve, you have an opportunity. Don't make it doom and gloom. Say, all right, screw it. You're young. It's a chance for you to play. Your reserve, it's a chance for you to play. Let's figure it out. Brad Friedel doesn't have a ton of pressure to win this game really at all this year. He's building something. So everything this year should be framed as, all right, this is cool.
I don't know if Brad Friedel agrees with that.
This is what I'm going to say. He absolutely doesn't agree with that.
Okay.
Brad Friedel is definitely not going to approach this
with a
smile. But
he's going to appreciate it in the last month or two of the season when he's like, I'm not here to win now.
Right. Yeah, when the time is right.
He's going to frame it the way the British would frame it is that, listen, you've got a chance, go prove it. It's not going to be optimistic. It'll still be opportunity-based, but it's like, you wanted a chance, this is it, prove to me you can play.
Here's
now
the thing for me. We'll move on in just a second.
I was going to say, Colorado at home is...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a good chance.
It's fine. It would be, like, if you're like, oh, well, we have to go on the road to Toronto FC in our next game, and you guys got these red cards, and like, probably wasn't a game we expected to win anyway, but you got Colorado at home to start the season at home. This is a game that you as an organization should expect to win.
Yeah.
No offense to the Rapids. A little bit offense to the Rapids.
Yeah.
You should expect to win this game. And now you've got this big hole on the Rapids side. They've got to look at this and say, like,
or not a hole. Or not a hole.
Oh, that's another good point. Rapids got to look at this and say, like, oh, okay. Like, all of a sudden, an opportunity has opened for us on the road. This is our opening game of the season. What do we do?
I just want to say it could be awesome if, say, Bye and Jahlil do play and they're great.
Yeah.
There could be a scenario in 2 weeks, guys, where all of a sudden the Revs have Lewin, Nemeth, Dielna, and De La Mea all on the trade block. Is that
like
their four highest players?
$3.7 million in salary.
Their four highest players. They're all on the bench ready to get traded.
That'd be very, very interesting. I'm still waiting to see what happens with the Rapids. I want to see how this attack comes together.
Yeah.
And I think the three-man center
we've
back line.
They have
Schuberg. They have plug-ins on the back
line. We've also all said we like Jack Price. There are some other pieces.
I started that train first.
No, okay.
You're on the second car.
I texted the group text that Jack Price looked pretty good with a lot of trepidation in the CCL because I know there's a lot of Champo hitters in there.
No. But he has looked good. So now the question is, how many of those other pieces hit? I think Eigner's a serviceable player. What else are you going to get in the attack?
Gashi is just, I'm like making the proverbial dice roll hand motion right here because God only knows what.
Was that what that is?
That is what that was. Look, Houston-Vancouver, for me, is the game I'm most excited for on Saturday. 6 p.m. Eastern, TSN 1-4 in Canada, MLS Live here in the States. Tomas Martinez has come back from a suspension. Does he start? We'll see. But now they have to – there's a prove-it aspect for them. They won 4-0 against Atlanta, and they're home again. Vancouver this time, who played pretty well against Montreal in week one.
This is going to be my are-they-good game of the week. I have that tweet going out with the set with the kind
like
of game each game is. That's going to be my are they good? Because they both won. They both had flashes of dang. But, you know, coming up against each other, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a hype train game of the week. Well, these are two Davies action.
These are two teams that had big ups and big downs last season, right? They went on 5 or 6 game stretches where they were the best team in the West and then 5 or 6 games where you didn't think they'd make the playoffs. So how do they manage those moments this year, right? More consistency.
Exactly.
And has Houston – I still have a question. Did Houston just come out and blitz Atlanta and, you know, they're athletic and they threw it down their throats? Or do they have more than one club in the bag? Have they graduated?
And this is the game to find that out. Because Vancouver probably will, like Houston, want to sit deeper – use Davies, use Kamara on the break. So this is a chance for Houston to show that they can play against a team who's not going to dictate the possession.
My must-see game of Saturday is Red Bulls-Portland, but that's also because I'll be there. And Gio Savarese, his second game
Even
ever.
Though you say it's Red Bulls too.
Yeah. Well, Red Bulls 2 are my squad.
Oh, that's
I don't
point.
Root
yeah,
for
yeah,
MLS team. I don't gotcha. Have a team. Yeah. But I do root for New York Red Bulls 2. That's my squad.
Okay.
But also, Portland needs to rebound. Is Savarese going to change the formation already? Does he go two up top? We talked about Armenteros, what he can bring. Maybe the midfield feels more comfortable that way as well. So a lot of question marks there for Portland. Big moment for Savarese.
7 p.m.
Well.
Eastern on that game. The other game's here, Bobby. Chicago SKC at 6 Eastern. We talked to Paul. That is the Fire's opening game of the season here. And then Orlando hosting Minnesota at 7:30. What are you looking for on Saturday?
I want to see if Chicago is good. I really hope that they go with just a flowing three in the midfield and don't try and play a number 10 at that attacking. Even if it's Baquero or Chani, either one, just play three possession. Let Katai be your playmaker. Let Vincent and Polster fly down the wing. So I'm really interested to see what kind of style Chicago goes with.
Beware number 10s. If Bobby ever gets a job where he's given jobs on the soccer side, you're done.
But I just want to say I completely agree with you, and I think you have the characteristics in Chani and Schweinsteiger to fill that void, mm-hmm. right? It's not – put three defensive midfielders out there. It's three box-to-box guys
yep.
who can see the final pass. Chani can change the game either with his pass or with his athleticism to break open a line, pass a line. And then if you're going to have two fullbacks in this league that have to give you production, I think Brandon Vincent and Matt Polster are almost as good as you can get.
And Chani's career is on the brink like it has been twice before, and he's going to put up a great year. I would totally buy Chani's
He did
stock.
It for Vancouver last
yeah,
year
he
at times.
He was very good at times. Dax McCarty's also, I think, the perfect guy to be your defensive midfielder in that situation because he really understands how to split those lines and find players in places where you may not be Sasha Kljestan, but you can turn and you'll have runners coming off you.
One of the interesting things Paul alluded to, touched on a little bit, though, is, I mean, are you going to get 27 goals or 25 goals from Nikolic?
No.
So if you're not...
Easy answer, no.
So if you're not, where are you going to get it? And that is a question mark, right? He came in so well. He has scored goals everywhere he's gone. He has been in short stays everywhere he's gone. He comes in, he hits the ground running, and then for the most part, it's an upward move. So I'm not saying he pushes himself out or teams don't like him, but he consistently moves on. So can he be a long-time option for them up top?
Sunday's games, juicy ones, 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. You've got Atlanta and DC United. So two straight losses to start the season for the Five Stripes. That's tough, man. I don't know. Obviously,
I
they can't,
love that.
Obviously, they can't beat DC. So, you know, DC
that
comes
is
in.
The most absurd stat of 2017.
It is just completely ridiculous. DC have made some moves here this week. They signed Joseph Mora from Saprissa. Left back, 25-year-old. That seems to be probably a guy they're bringing in to figure he'd start at this point. Taylor Kemp, a little bit of an unknown right now for them. And also Dan Kelly, USL legend, comes in for DC United.
You played against Dan Kelly.
Can we just say the weirdest part of last weekend was seeing somebody catch up to Darren Maddox in the open field? How did that happen? Like, what happened there?
Mohamed Al-Munir, come on, props to that dude.
I know, total props to him, but how shocking. I feel like he was out in...
I feel like Maddox slowed down because he's like, nobody catches Darren in the open field. And then, unfortunately, he got caught.
That would have made such a good quote after the game.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to catch Darren. They dared.
New York City, LA Galaxy finished the weekend off at 5 p.m. local, almost live on that one. Alessandrini... and then also
Chris Pontius is out as well.
Two absences.
And I think
there.
Leggett has a minutes restriction, so I don't know that he's a starter. So now you're going deep. You're the LA Galaxy. Maybe you slide Dos Santos out there, Gio. You have a few different options, but it's not ideal. I think Alessandrini was your biggest guarantee this season from that team. You're not 100% sure on Gio. Ola Camaro's coming to a new team. Leggett's hurt.
Ima Boateng is inconsistent.
Ima Boateng is inconsistent as well. I think Alessandrini was your lightning rod where everything else can operate around it, so that's a big loss.
It is a big loss. 5 p.m. on that one. Of course, all the coverage, MLSsoccer.com, MLS Matchday Central, rolling throughout the weekend, all the analysis, all the highlights, all the banter that you may want and need. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. Go ahead and bookmark that one. And, of course, extratime at MLSsoccer.com is the email. MLS Week 2, Matt Doyle will be with us on Monday to break it all down. In the meantime, we're going to the mailbag. That's coming next.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental into the mailbag. Thank you so much for chatting with us every single week. The texts come flying through. Of course, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag is getting just super packed at this point. The email is always popping as well. Congratulations to FC Megalodon that won the Extra Time Radio Fantasy League from week one, 104 points. And he had, like, George Maliki didn't even play.
Yeah.
How did he win this thing?
He started Josie, who put up 2 points. Will Bruin, 5, not terrible. Shea Salinas, 3. But he captained Vaco. And he got 34 points from Vaco.
Had Davies, had Danny Hoyson. Of course, he bet against the Loons. No surprise there. Nico Lodero had a decent one.
Is that the game plan?
That's a pretty good fantasy.
So should I be looking at Orlando players top to bottom?
1,000% Orlando players. Justin Miram, if you don't have him on your team, that's a shocker.
I already have him on my team.
Yeah, that's a shocker. Hold on to him. Let's get into the mail. You know how to get at us.
So we've got this new form, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. So we're going to start there. Thomas DeLorenzo. It's been widely said that MLS clubs can't compete with Liga MX on depth, but Seattle and New York Red Bull came out with less than ideals 11 and got results. Is MLS getting competitive up and down the roster finally?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole point of this TAM initiative, right? It's quality for sure. But it's also, as we've talked about over and over and over this preseason, entering into an era in which, like, you don't have 8 or 9 guys based strictly on money that you have to play. All of a sudden, there's a guy behind them that, like, as a coach, as an organization, you can say, beat him out. If you don't beat him out, he's got the profile, the resume, the ability to be as good or better than you are. So I think certainly depth from a TAM perspective, but also just depth from, as you said, Dave, homegrowns, guys that you brought through your pipeline, players that you developed.
Well,
clubs are getting better at that.
Yeah, the USL thing that we don't talk about as much, but we're starting to see more and more. T2 just did a couple, is signing guys out of college, not letting them go through the draft, even if they're not homegrowns. That's what Florian Velo was, Aaron Long sort of, and then you can develop them in your own system, under your own coaches. Kevin Chan, for you here. Bobby, as a general MLS fan, should I feel perturbed that Red Bulls couldn't keep the ball and looked like they were in a 50-50 state of panic with every touch, or should I just forget it all that and celebrate woot-woot?
That was like the weakest woot-woot I've ever heard. This is a woo with exclamation marks.
One exclamation mark.
Well,
that's all you get.
That's a good point.
Just celebrate.
Give him more.
Yeah, just celebrate. Don't overthink it. Listen, obviously it'd be nice if we could go into these places and dominate on the road, but the thing we forget about soccer, because we only ever watch the top 4 teams in Bundesliga and the Premier League in Spain and Brazil when they're on, is that there really are like 10 teams in the world that can go anywhere on the road and dominate possession.
And even they can't always.
So just in general, in this sport, in this game of soccer, it's really hard to go on the road to a new stadium, to a new surface, and possess. So what Red Bulls did was fantastic. And
Nathan and Trenton celebrating TFC beats Tigres at BMO. Osorio with cheekiest CCL goal ever. Hashtag CCL fever. Then we've got Ed in St. Louis with a hot take. Toronto's better, more talented than the Red Bulls, but New York has the grit to play in CCL. I think we saw it first in their playoff game against each other last year and again tonight. I think he talked about this with Red Bulls on the road. New York has what it takes to make the other team get angry at them, get off their game. Sidebar, it helps when your keeper makes a few amazing saves.
I feel like somebody in this room we're stealing opinions out of the mailbag here.
What?
I heard that exact opinion. I mean, maybe it's all like great minds think alike, but I think Tyler Adams is.
I agree with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Tyler Adams has the potential to be an A+ disruptor, like if all these years we always looked at other teams and we're like, man, this guy really gets under MLS team skin and like takes
Gomez
them off their game.
From Panama? What's his first name?
Gabby.
Gabby Gomez?
Yeah, he's pretty good at that. But I think Tyler Adams he's got that in him. I'd like to see him get in the semis.
Let me ask you about this. Grayson on Twitter, I remember at Extra Time Radio bigging up Jesse Marsh before he joined New York Red Bulls. I was slow to appreciate him. Now I want to see him as the next USMNT manager. I think his tactics best suit the player pool. I think Tab is an aversion to number 10s. What do you think?
It makes my head explode to think about who the perfect coach is for the national team.
Yeah, it's so
tough. It seems like we should stop trying to figure out who the right guy is and just say there's this pocket of people that are in the rightish mix, and like you just kind of hope you get it
and
right.
Is he one of them?
He's absolutely one of them.
Here's the tough thing, not to like slow down our pace here.
Wow.
But the U.S. national team are in a place where, like, timing is super important as well, right? So you're joining this organization, this program as the head coach. Like, what's your job? What are the technical director's jobs? What is the resources at your disposal? What kind of support will you have? Who are the people above you that decide whether you're doing a good job or a bad job? And a lot of the guys we talk about have great jobs. Peter Vermees has a wonderful job in Kansas City with amazing facilities and support and appreciation of fan base. Greg Berhalter, Clemens Croisier are in a little bit of a flux right now, but he's such an amazing club coach. There's no way that if something happened that he wouldn't have a great spot to land, in my opinion, especially with expansion coming. Jesse Marsh has built the Red Bulls in this amazing thing, and we know all about him taking flights back to Europe. To sit around and be like, these MLS coaches are the best candidates, ignores the fact that they may not want the job right now.
People have given up in their lives and soccer lives to represent and push U.S. soccer, the smallest thing they could do is take their dream job.
But you're making an assumption about the dream job. Jesse Marsh has been going to Europe for X amount of time.
Yes.
Does he want to go there instead?
Is this not a roadway to that?
Maybe not, because the team is young and there's not a World Cup to play into, and then you've got X number of years of no competitive games until it starts back up.
Well, if he takes over, you've got a cycle. If you take over when the GM gets hired at the end of this year, whatever it is.
There's uncertainty
there's uncertainty for every job. A lot of these guys have given up a ton for U.S. soccer when they probably had to put five in a room and take a bus down to Central America for World Cup qualifying and play away games in California as home qualifiers.
I'm not saying that it's not attractive. Okay. I'm just saying that it's much more complicated than sitting around here and saying, these are the best coaches in MLS. One of them will go.
I'm all about thinking about the other side, but you crazy on this one.
All right, fine.
Thor Morgan on Twitter, please call Tuesday segment with Sam Gam Tam. Thank you, Sam. The world needs this. I think we could do something
that. Yeah.
And Paul from Houston, did Weeby say about mustard that he can, quote, literally eat mustard and, like, put it in my mouth, quote? What does he do with other condiments?
Well, I don't do that with other condiments. I don't.
No, his point was, you literally said it's so good, I eat it. What else would you do with it?
This conversation's making me uncomfortable.
I don't know. Put a lot of it on. Like, I'm the sort of person that puts as much mustard as possible on both sides of the sandwich and then puts a little pool of mustard on my plate to
dip the
sandwich.
That's good stuff. I appreciate
that's
that.
That's me.
Bryce Mueller sent us a message on MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. It seems the power rankings are a little low on Orlando City with one man down for 50 minutes and five projected starters out. I think this was a great showing. They had 60% possession and 80% pass efficiency. Yes. Bryce Mueller said that. Now, Chris Mueller was drafted by Orlando City this year. I think that as a lame fake name suited him there, Chris
if
Mueller.
If Chris Mueller listens to this show, I mean, the only way he would have gotten into Extreme Radio, unless he's just like a huge
MLS
podcast
fan.
MLS fan,
yeah,
is Ben Bear all
Wisconsin
the praise
zone, yeah.
Somebody got to him and said there's this guy on this show that's obsessed with you because
watch
you're from
out for him
from your
get
Wisconsin
so
from Wisconsin
so but for Orlando City, because we didn't talk about them as much, they're playing Minnesota. It doesn't seem like anyone who was out last week is going to return. What do you see from this team? What's the goal for Jason Kreis until he starts to get pieces back?
That game they played, the result they got, was the best possible. That was better than them winning, guys. That was better than them running out 4-0 victors. To go through the adversity.
I'm crazy about this U.S.
To do it at home, because the points didn't matter as much there as just building credibility within the team and within the fan base. To have that moment at home to show down players, down a man, within themselves, that was the best thing that could have happened to them, to go through that adversity and come out on the other side.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying they would have taken the 3 points.
Not long term. Long term, that statement was more important than the points.
Okay, we'll see.
Last two. One, we got a text message from someone saying, just checking if this works. Are you guys walking distance to the original Subway sandwich shop?
I didn't know the original Subway sandwich shop was here.
But it would make sense it's in New York since it's Subway.
That's a connection.
But I don't actually know where it is. And last one was wondering, of the teams that lost or tied over the first weekend, which would get back to winning and why also you can't say Toronto? From Perry in Portland.
RSL.
Okay. That's
with
good
LA,
one.
I mean, LAFC at home, that's a pretty safe one. I don't know. New England lost.
Do
like,
you
well,
say Atlanta?
Sorry, New England.
Home to D.C.
No,
I know we
DC.
Made the jokes.
Yeah, I think Atlanta gets – I'll go out on the limb. and say Atlanta breaks their duck against D.C. I have to imagine everybody in that locker room is, like, scratching their head, like, D.C.? D.C.? What?
I want to say something at the end of the show. Not sure how many people are listening still. But, guys, the whole time I've been super down on Atlanta, and I've been like, I don't – and I've been too nervous to say it out loud because everyone else is stoked on Atlanta. And this whole time I've been like, are they really going to be good, or is there just, like, too much unpredictable about that team? So I'm going to say it out loud now, hoping that people don't hear it and if I'm wrong, but I'm going to replay it if I'm right.
Yeah, well, what did you say again?
And what are you saying?
I'm just not sure they're that good.
Okay. What does that good mean?
That they missed the playoffs.
Whoa.
You're saying that.
I was too nervous before.
You're 100% saying that? You're not saying it's a possibility. You're saying that's what you think will happen. Bobby locked it in.
It was a thought that was going through my mind.
I was too nervous
because I was just nervous to say it before. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm putting it out in the world and seeing how
it goes.
Well,
I appreciate you getting over that and putting that out there. Big thanks to Paul Tenorio, national writer for MLSsoccer.com, for joining us. Of course, thanks to you guys, Bobby Warshaw, David Goss, Ben Bear, Matt Doyle will be with us on Monday. We'll break it all down. Hit us up. You know how to get at us.
And
in the meantime,
Sam.
Yeah, you're right. In the meantime, thank you to Continental for all the support. We'll see you next week, everybody. We'll be right back.